Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. You drink a cup of coffee or tea to sharpen your mind, but these days, caffeine's got competition. More people than you might think are turning to so-called smart pills or putting on electrostimulation helmets, hoping, believing they can actually increase their intelligence. The science may or may not be there, but it is coming, and it raises a lot of questions. This hour On Point, what if we could all be smarter? You can join us on air or online. Would you amp your brain if you could? Have you tried? Popped a Go pill, maybe? If we could all make ourselves smarter, what do you think it would mean for each of us and for society? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. First this hour, we have some news of our own to share with you. Yesterday, Boston University, which owns WBUR, dismissed Tom Ashbrook from his role as host of On Point. Boston University reached this decision after an independent review verified claims that Tom had created an abusive work environment. Over the past 2 months, while Tom Ashbrook was off the air, two firms investigated allegations made by 11 former On Point producers. A law firm looked into sexual harassment allegations and found that Tom's unwelcome conduct was not sexual in nature and did not constitute sexual harassment under university policy. A consulting firm looked into broader workplace culture issues at On Point. It concluded that Tom consistently overstepped reasonable lines and created a dysfunctional workplace. The investigators talked with about 60 people, including Tom, and management. Both reports stated that WBUR management was aware of Tom's behavior and repeatedly talked with him about it, but was unsuccessful in changing his behavior. Boston University has hired a consulting firm to work with WBUR to improve communication, strengthen organizational management, and assure a positive work environment at On Point and throughout the station. All of us at On Point and WBUR remain committed to this program and its mission of having the conversations that matter. We turn now to today's topic, which is brain enhancement. We're taking a deep look at the science and the culture and even the morals around intelligence. Joining me now from London is David Adam. He is an editor at the science journal Nature. He's just out with a book called The Genius Within, Unlocking Your Brain's Potential. If you go to our website, onpointradio.org, you'll find an excerpt. David, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
So your book is a fascinating investigation into neuroenhancement, whether pills and brain hacking and so much else can make us smarter. What drew you to this subject?
So I wrote a book a few years ago about OCD and my experiences with mental illness. And after that book came out, I became involved with a group of psychiatrists who were trying to improve treatments for various mental illnesses. And at one point they said to me, you know, how would you feel about having your brain stimulated with electricity? And it turns out that all across the world in universities and hospitals, psychiatrists and doctors and scientists are using this stuff to see if they can develop new treatments for mental illnesses, so from depression right the way through to schizophrenia. But of course, there's a long tradition of medicines being developed to fix people, being used by the healthy healthy population to enhance themselves. And the most obvious example of that is the use of drugs in sport. Mm. You know, a lot of the steroids and what have you were developed and are still used as medicines. And the more I looked into it, the more it turned out that there was this really interesting parallel sort of effort going on in the shadows by people, by the public. And it's relatively easy to get hold of some of this stuff. And as you said in the introduction, sort of whether or not they think it works, they're having a go. And I thought, well, that just sounds a really interesting topic because it raises lots of questions both about about those techniques and what they do, but also some quite deep philosophical questions about, well, actually, what are they changing? What is intelligence? And is it fair to do that?
Well, in fact, you yourself were a guinea pig of sorts to sort of study this matter with smart pills and electric brain stimulation. Tell us about your own experience.
Well, so I'm a reporter, and I thought if I'm going to be writing about how easy it is to get hold of this stuff, then I should do that. And if I get hold of it, I may as well have a go. So I did. I went onto a website on the black market and bought some smart pills, which was actually a medicine called modafinil, and I bought an electrical brain stimulator, which was very rudimentary, just sort of a battery and a couple of wires. But then I thought, well, how do I test it? And in a lot of these laboratory studies test quite specific measures. You know, can someone react to a dot on a computer screen, that kind of thing, which I thought, that's not really going to tell me anything. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll try and cheat my way into Mensa, the high IQ society. So I went for an IQ test to get my baseline, as it were.
Yeah.
And then I left it a year and 3 months because there's an effect. You know, once you've taken an IQ test, you get better at taking IQ tests.
And so 15 months later, what happened when you took the Mensa
later,
test?
Well, so I had some of the smart pill and I did some brain stimulation. And yeah, my IQ went up by 10 points.
Wow. And you attribute it to those smart pills and to the brain enhancement that you used.
I think that's one of the explanations. I mean, I shouldn't overstate the effect that I think it had. I think it did have an effect, but equally, there are other explanations. But the fact is that if my IQ hadn't gone up in that way, I probably wouldn't be here now talking to you.
So what did you feel when you did that stuff, when you took the modafinil? I mean, just give us a sense of you felt sharper, you felt more focused, you felt smarter. I mean, what was going on actually inside your brain?
Yeah, so all of those things. So modafinil is a medicine that's given for sleep disorders like narcolepsy. So we know it makes people more alert. So I took one and it takes about an hour for it to kick in, perhaps. And we should say, of course, I knew I'd taken it. So some of this could have been a placebo effect. Right. You know, I was waiting to feel different. But I definitely did feel different. I felt like I could focus. I felt like I could concentrate. I felt like I was less easily distracted. I think a good way of describing it is I was extremely aware of what I was doing and much less aware of what everyone else was doing. And I remember I was working from home at the time, and I came home at lunchtime, and so I went through the front door and said to my wife, I feel fantastic. It was just very, very, I guess it was like taking an awful lot of coffee, but without any of the side effects. I didn't feel jittery. I didn't feel jumpy. I just felt like my brain was working to its full potential.
Here's a bit from a news package from the Indian channel One India News from February 2016. The go pill that they are talking about in this clip is modafinil, as we have been discussing here with David Adam. It's used heavily by Air Force pilots in India and, in fact, around the world. In the United States, it's the only drug approved by the Air Force.
The IAF fighter pilots are now increasingly using these authorized pills to boost their alertness levels and as well as flight fatigue and sleep deprivation during round-the-clock combat exercises as well. The go pill, which have gained quite an admiration in the military aviation circles around the world for its alertness enhancing and fatigue managing properties.
So it increases alertness, he said, enhances your mood and helps manage your fatigue. Is that right, David Adam?
I didn't get to the point where I was particularly fatigued, but then I wasn't flying an aeroplane, but I could certainly see it would probably help with that. Mm-hmm. All I was doing was writing a book, which isn't, of course, the same, but I definitely felt that I wrote more and I could spend longer doing it before I wanted to go and do something else.
You write about college students around the world who feel the pressure to do well in school. They're increasingly turning to these smart pills. Who else is using them? We see the pilots there. I mean, who's using this and what's the availability and the legal status of smart drugs around the world?
So the only way we know really is by asking people. So certain surveys, you know, are some are more reliable than others, but certainly some surveys suggest that about up to a quarter or a fifth of university students have tried some kind of a smart pill. People in Silicon Valley have talked and written about it. Professional scientists, if you survey them, a decent percentage, about a fifth of them, say they've tried it, and surgeons. So I think it's definitely happening. And in terms of availability, modafinil is a licensed medicine in most countries. And so it's subject to whatever laws those countries place on medicine. So in the UK, for example, where I am, modafinil can only be given out under a doctor's prescription. So it's not actually illegal to have it, to possess it, but it is illegal for me to supply it to somebody else.
In fact, there are actual drug busts, right, for smart pills? You write about that?
Yeah. Because that's it. Because it's a sort of a controlled medicine, it's okay to have them, but it's not okay to move them around and supply them. And there's a huge market for them. So, yeah, a couple of years ago in the UK, they did a raid and got hot and seized, thousands and thousands of different types of cognitive enhancers, which I think shows you the demand is out there for this stuff.
So it's not just smart pills. It's electrical brain stimulation. What else is out there, David Adam?
Well, I think so. Those are the two. Those are the two techniques that I tried in the book, because they are relatively cheap and easy to get hold of. If you want to introduce electric currents to the brain, it's actually more effective to use a magnetic stimulator, and then you can induce higher currents within the brain. And if you go into a hospital or a research lab, they usually have one of those, but they're not so easy to get hold of.
I've got to go to break here. I've got 10 seconds. Is it safe?
Modafinil, it's brain stimulation. I don't know. I tried it and nothing bad happened.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
You've probably heard about this Russia investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Every day there's a new headline about it. Well, Embedded is back with two episodes that lay the whole thing out, start to finish, so the news makes sense. Listen on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about what neuroscientists know and still don't know about human intelligence and the first glimmers that we may be able to become more intelligent through the modern miracle of science. You can join the conversation. Do you think brain enhancement is okay? Or is it like doping in competitive sports? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. My guest this hour, David Adam. He's the editor at the science journal Nature. His new book is called The Genius Within, Unlocking Your Brain's Potential. I want to play this infomercial put out by Halo Neuroscience. The Olympic ski jumpers have been using the Halo Sport headset to train. It claims to be the first headset to stimulate parts of your brain responsible for muscle movement through a process they call neuropriming. Here, from the infomercial, are U.S. Olympic officials talking up the brain-enhancing headsets.
Halo Sport really offers a unique and new technology for us. The ability to neuroprime, or increase the brain's ability to learn new skills, has never been done before.
It essentially creates brain plasticity to help enhance motor learning with our athletes.
The brain's role in performance is almost everything.
We are seeing an enhanced learning ability with the athletes, and we're seeing enhanced power output.
So, David Adam, it's not just Olympic athletes, NBA players and beyond are wearing these brain stimulating devices. Tell us about that, what they do.
Well, so We've talked about the smart drugs and things like modafinil, and what they do, of course, is they just saturate the entire brain. So you just have to hope for the best, really. The plan behind brain stimulation is you can be more targeted. So, you know, we're not there yet, but we are getting to the point where we've got a reasonable idea about which parts of the brain are involved with some activities. So learning motor skills is a good one. And so in theory, you can target that part of the brain with electric current. And one type of, or one of the electrodes seems to be able to make that part of the brain that you target easier to fire. And conversely, another one of the electrodes also seems to sort of make a part of the brain more difficult to fire. So again, in theory, you have at your fingertips an ability to go in and intervene with the way the brain works for one of the first times.
So an athlete still needs to train as hard as they did before, but their body somehow is more prepared to process that training, recover from that training. There's more hyperplasticity going on.
Yeah, I don't think we know, to be honest. And Halo, you know, have made some quite strong claims about what they think is going on. But I think certainly in theory, we know that, you know, when you learn a new skill, your brain puts down new connections or it makes those connections easier to fire. And again, this is what we see in mental illness. When people have successful treatments for mental illness, you can see differences in the way that their brains are connected and are wired up and they work. And so in theory, you could certainly make the case that an electrical field passed over a certain part of the brain would make those connections easier to form and more longer lasting when they have formed. And so in theory, I suppose that could help people to learn, yeah, or whether to learn quicker or for that effect to be longer, more longer lasting.
Mm. I've got calls around the block here. Let me get Eric in from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Eric. You're on the air. Welcome to the program. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great conversation. I'm a big believer in this stuff. Now, I'm a recovering addict. I used to take Adderall a while, which is like Ritalin, which is just, you know, a basic amphetamine to help focus me, but there's obvious problems. I don't touch any of that stuff anymore. But can you talk a bit about the issue, the calculated risk for people like me who want to accelerate evolution, if you want to call it that, in this area? Also really quick, microdosing psychedelics. Is that something that you have any research or experience on?
Eric, thanks so much. David Adam, what do you say? What about for someone like Eric?
On the first, I mean, of course there are risks to taking a medicine, but because certainly Adderall, Ritalin and Modafinil are licensed medicines, they have gone through the various tests. And so they are as safe in theory as any other medicine that you would get prescribed. Now, whether you should use them in conditions or for conditions which aren't prescribed for is a different question. But certainly there shouldn't be any acute toxicity effects or something like that, as long as, it is what it says it is, because that's one of the other issues. I found out when I was writing the book, it's a lot easier to buy this stuff than it is to find someone who can check it out for you and make sure it is what it says it is. And then the second question was
microdosing.
Yeah, I've read about this. I haven't tried it. I haven't seen a great deal of scientific study into it. I know it's something that people talk about and they're strong advocates of it. That doesn't seem to have been, it's not been developed as a medical technique, and therefore it hasn't had this jump from medicine to society. It sort of started out in society. Mm-hmm. And I don't think science and medicine has caught up with the promised benefits.
Eric, I appreciate the call. Let's get Barbara in here from Lake Placid, New York. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. I'm thinking about the long-term pharmaceuticals effects on the brain. I want to know, first of all, is this going to help people with degenerative brain disease like Alzheimer's and stuff caused by head injuries like these football players? And something from your previous hour's worth about the school shooting. Mm-hmm. I got, before I say my main statement, how about homeschooling? You won't have your kid get shot if they're not in the school.
All right, get to the point, Barbara. Degenerative brain disease, and what happens if you stop using these pills?
Yeah, these the long-term effects, it's like the Rogaine. If you stop using the Rogaine, the pharmaceuticals in the Rogaine, if you stop using the stuff on your head, the hair doesn't grow back and actually you get balder. And a lot of these pills, they're not tested fully by the FDA before they put them out. What happens when you get stupider when you stop taking the pills?
Good question, Barbara. Let me get David in here to answer it. What do you say?
Well, so in terms of long-term use, I think, yeah, it's a fair question. We're not entirely sure because people haven't been taking them routinely for that long. I suppose thinking about a world in which they were available and widely used and known to be effective, I'm not sure people would take them every day. I think you would probably take it. There aren't many examples, certainly in adult life, where you're sort of tested in that way where you need to perform at your best. I think there are certain professions where you can certainly make the case that they should be, if it works, they should be taking it routinely, you know, surgeons, judges, people, airline pilots. But for most people, I don't know, in my job, I don't feel like I need the boost of a cognitive enhancer every single day, but I can imagine there might be certain times in a particular deadline or if you have a professional exam when you might reach for this as a bit of extra help. Of course, it's worth saying there's loads of other techniques that people can use to try and get their brain to be working at the full potential. And it makes a lot of sense to try those first. You know, make sure you get enough sleep, you eat properly. People tend to work better at certain times of the day. So if you can work out what that is. And it's really, I think, only when people are already working at the close to their maximum, would they sort of get a bit of a benefit from reaching for this kind of additional technique?
David, hold on just a minute. Let me bring another voice into the conversation. A top researcher in the field of human intelligence, Richard Heyer, joins me from Irvine, California. Psychologist and researcher, he's professor emeritus at the University of California, Irvine's Medical School. He's also editor-in-chief of the journal Intelligence and author of the book The Neuroscience of Intelligence. Richard, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Well, hi, Jane. Nice to be with you.
Thank you. You research intelligence. What do you make of what you're hearing this hour?
It's pretty interesting. It's always an interesting conversation to talk about enhancing intelligence. The book that I wrote about this covers the research on this in great detail. And the bottom line is there's just no weight of evidence to support any of these possibilities that show that they actually do increase intelligence.
So it's just anecdotal claims? It's just people's experience?
Completely. There are some research studies that show some promise. When those research studies have been replicated, they fail. So in science, independent replication is one of the standards that you use, and all these things, even when they show promise with individual studies, so far with replication, they failed. So I do agree with David completely that there's a tremendous demand for these things. And there has been for many years. And I also agree with David that there's a tremendous possibility for enhancing cognitive abilities and maybe even intelligence based on a neuroscience understanding of what goes on in the brain. But we're not there yet, and it's going to be a while before we are.
So tremendous demand. Does that make it okay? To your mind, is brain doping the future? And is that okay? Where do you draw the line?
Well, right now, I don't think it's okay. I think a lot of these drugs do have side effects and unknown side effects for long-term use. I wouldn't take any. If there was a way to be smarter, I'd be first in line. But I wouldn't take any of these drugs. I wouldn't have my kids take any of these drugs, just because there's no evidence that they do anything, from a scientific point of view. So I wish there were, but so far they're not. But having said that, the most promising thing in the field is understanding the genetics of intelligence, because once genes are identified that influence intelligence, then what those genes do in the brain can be identified. And once we understand what the neurobiological mechanisms are that underlie intelligence, then we can figure out ways to tweak those mechanisms and possibly enhance intelligence. This is the same sequence of events as in other parts of medicine where they try to understand something like the genetics of schizophrenia or the genetics of depression. so that you can figure out what those genes do and then come up with the treatments that target the specific brain systems that are involved.
That's so interesting. Are we close to identifying these, as you say, these neurobiological mechanisms?
Depends what you mean by close.
Yeah.
I might see something in my lifetime. I'm nearing 70 years old,
mm-hmm.
but I hope I do see something. It's very exciting, the genetics of intelligence. That research is going very quickly, and there are probably about 1,000 genes involved, and so figuring out what 1,000 genes do and how they interact with each other, I think most neuroscientists would say it's a nightmare problem. But that doesn't mean it's not a solvable problem.
So to your mind,
take a while.
David Heyer, to what extent is intelligence determined by genetics?
Genetics has a major influence on intelligence. About 80% of the variance in adults seems to be related to genetics. It gets a little tricky because genes express themselves in an environment. And there is some reason to believe that some genes interact with some environmental variables, so it's not just a matter of genetics. We now understand that genetics, genes are not necessarily deterministic. They're more probabilistic. So, for example, if you have genes that give you high cholesterol, that doesn't mean you're going to have a heart attack. It means you can have lifestyle changes to minimize the probability of a heart attack, even though you may be at higher risk genetically. So it's a similar thing with intelligence and other complex human behaviors.
Let me get some sound in here. This is Lacey Green, host of a popular YouTube show called Seeker. In this April 2014 episode, she talks about the rise of smart drugs, also called study drugs, in schools around the nation.
Researchers put the actual number of students who use study drugs nationwide at about 30%, around 1 in 3. By study drugs, I mean Ritalin, Adderall, Vyvanse, all stimulants that are approved medically to treat ADHD. Adderall is by far the most abused, though. Scientists actually tracked Adderall mentions on Twitter last year, and there were over 200,000 tweets, which peaked during exam periods. Unsurprisingly, many of them referenced studying.
Richard Heyer, what do you make of that? I mean, Ritalin, Adderall, Vyvanse, gosh,
this has been true for more than a decade.
Yeah.
These drugs have been around for a long time. They are widely used both in high schools and in colleges.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean they work. And if they do work, it probably is on alertness or the ability to pay attention.
Mm.
That is not the same thing as intelligence. So when I say there's no evidence that they work, I mean there's no evidence that they increase intelligence. No evidence at all, really.
Let's get Nicole in here on this point from Boston. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me. To that exact point, I took Adderall on and off for about 15 years, thinking that I had ADHD. I actually had anxiety, so it's finally being treated correctly. And my experience was very odd. I was told that I'd be able to focus more, but what actually happened is my creativity was completely stunted. So I was normally off of Adderall, like a very right brain thinker, and then on Adderall, I was very hyper focused on left brain leaning things, and my right brain essentially disappeared, which made it odd on the weekends. Because I'd be off of Adderall, and then I couldn't find things that I had put away on Adderall. It was always a battle, and my mom described me as robotic on Adderall. I couldn't think at a higher level on Adderall, off of Adderall. I was a much higher level thinker, talker. So it was a weird experience for me. I didn't find that it made me more intelligent at all. I just found that it switched my intelligence in a way. From one side to the other. And I guess my question is Adderall considered an intelligence-enhancing drug? Because in my experience, it just wasn't.
Nicole, thank you. Richard Heyer, what do you say?
Some people claim that, but there's no evidence to support it. I would say that the book that David has written and my book both share enthusiasm for the possibilities here. But I'm just a lot more skeptical of what's been done so far. My book talks about three laws. The first is that no story about the brain is simple. The second law is no one study is definitive. And the third law is it takes many years to sort all this out and develop a compelling weight of evidence to see what works and what doesn't. And we just have a long way to go on this.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about what it will mean if science can actually make people smarter. Some people think we're already there. Others think that day will come, but we're not there quite yet. You can join us. What is intelligence to you? Is it just about computing power? Is it related to our morals? Would boosting our intelligence civilize us, make us a more moral people? Or would it just be another tool in a competitive world? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest this hour, David Adam, author of The Genius Within, Unlocking Your Brain's Potential, and Richard Heyer, professor emeritus at the University of California, Irvine's Medical School, and author of The Neuroscience of Intelligence. Here's a commercial for a product called Brain Doctor Water. You can buy it online for about $100 for a month's supply. We are definitely not endorsing this product. We just want you to hear the claims that it makes.
What if there was a refreshing drink that improved memory, mental focus, and could protect your brain function? A healthy energy drink, revolutionized with minimal caffeine and without sugar, that gave you the mental advantage to be at the top of your game all the time. Formulated by a board-certified neurologist, Brain Doctor Water contains huperzine A, carnitine, resveratrol, and other doctor-tested ingredients that power up the mind, improve memory, and tap into your brain's limitless ability.
And in the 2011 thriller Limitless, Bradley Cooper plays Eddie, a writer who can't get it together to actually write. A friend, a ne'er-do-well named Vern, offers him a pill that will help with that, and Eddie gets superhuman smarts. That gets him into some trouble, and that's another story. Here's the scene that changes Eddie's life.
I've been doing some consulting for a pharmaceutical company.
Well, like some offshore lab make a fake Viagra? Come on, Vern.
No. This is an exclusive product. It's coming on stream next year. They've had clinical trials, and it's FDA approved.
What's in it?
They've identified these receptors in the brain that activate specific circuits. And you know how they say that we can only access 20% of our brain? Well, what this does? It lets you access all of it.
Let me get some listeners in here. Sally first from Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Sally. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. My name is Sally Stasio. I'm a ear, nose, and throat physician for a military hospital near Savannah.
Okay.
I was started modafinil for the treatment of adult ADD, and it has been extremely effective to help you focus. So I agree with the comments that these medications don't make you smarter. That's not the point, but they enhance what issues you're having performing in whatever responsibilities you have during the day. So, for example, focus, attention, alertness, paying attention to details, all that aspects of your job are going to be enhanced. And I found it very helpful. I still take it when I operate.
And any side effects, Sally?
Excellent medication. No, I haven't had any side effects. I've been on them for 2 years, on and off, you know, drug holidays now and then, but I have not had any long-term side effects, no issues with sleep, which is what most people would be concerned about.
Sally, Dr. Sally there in Savannah, thank you very much. Here's Michelle in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Michelle. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane, David, and Richard. I'm a medical licensed clinical social worker, as well as a cultural anthropologist and a person with narcolepsy. And one of the things that I find is that with modafinil Provigil being more and more used as a performance drug, those of us who rely on it to be able to function on a daily level are having a harder and harder time being able to get our medications refilled. They're more expensive. It's harder to have it covered by our insurance, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to mention with the Halo Sport and other non-pharmaceutical methods mm-hmm. of enhancing ability, those things are not covered by insurance. And while they would be wonderful to use with a lot of my patients, they're only available for those who are wealthy or who are privileged. And then I also wanted to mention you were discussing the dystopia possibility of those being enhanced over those not.
Right.
There's a really wonderful show called Gattaca that really addresses that. So I wanted to throw that out there.
Excellent, Michelle. Thank you very much. Well, to your first point, Michelle, David Adam, modafinil was developed originally to treat narcolepsy, as I remember. But to her broader point about the haves and the have-nots, it's really a critical issue, right? I mean, what are the ramifications here, the ethical questions, the moral questions of making these treatments available to those who can afford them, David Adam?
Well, I think it clearly is a moral and ethical question, but I think it is predicated on the idea, as Richard rightly says, does it work? And there are just a couple of points I want to make. First is, Richard's entirely right that we should be sceptical about the impact that these things have, but lots of scientists aren't as sceptical as him, and they publish studies which claim all sorts of increases in cognitive function, which the people on the other side of the fence in general society pick up on. And so that's partly what's driving the demand, some of the scientific claims that are made for it. And I think the other thing is interesting about If you change the brain, if you can alter cognitive function, is that necessarily the same as increasing intelligence? If you take a drug which helps you to focus because it helps you to motivate better or have more motivation, and you do better in an exam and you get a higher grade, is that any different from being more intelligent? I honestly don't know the answer to that, because there are certainly people who are intelligent who don't perform to their full potential because they're not motivated. So if you motivate them in whatever way, and education is a big part of motivating people to fulfill their potential. But in terms of access, I think it's absolutely right. But then, of course, it's not unique to this kind of intervention. But I think it's important to know and to do big tests to see whether this stuff does work. Because the other thing, it doesn't have to have a big effect for it to be significant.
Richard Heyer, talk about that a little bit. I mean, if cognitive enhancers go mainstream, as David mentioned, we begin to judge and rank people based on mental ability. What are the questions to your mind as we move forward?
Well, we certainly judge and rank people on mental ability now. If there was a so-called IQ pill, and I mean that metaphorically, not literally a pill, but some way to enhance intelligence, we could start with the 51 million Americans who have IQs under 85. If you have an IQ of under 85, you have great difficulty finding meaningful employment and supporting yourself, especially in the modern world. Of the 51 million Americans with IQs under 85, 14 million of them are children. Many of these 51 million people live in poverty because they just cannot compete economically based on their limited cognitive abilities. So if there was a way to enhance, even by 5 IQ points, that would be a major benefit to society.
Let me get Tracy in on that point from Johnson City, Tennessee. Hi, Tracy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. We adopted a baby. She's now 7. She had a traumatic brain injury as an infant. She was severely abused. And we're just really struggling right now with her education and getting her the services that she needs. And there's just so little research on traumatic brain injury. And I'm just wondering if maybe some of these drugs could enhance what she already has to help her make up for what she's lacking. Mm.
Tracy, thank you. David Adam, what about Tracy's question? And to Barbara, caller Barbara's earlier question about degenerative brain diseases. Is there promise there on both these fronts?
Well, I mean, I'm not a doctor, and I can't start telling people what they should and shouldn't do with their children, clearly. But definitely the issue of cognitive enhancement in science is largely driven by the threat of dementia. I mentioned at the beginning that there are very poor treatments available for many mental illnesses. And for things like dementia, there's very little at all. And if you can improve the cognitive abilities or stop the cognitive abilities declining at such a rapid rate, then clearly that would be a huge help to people. And that is driving a lot of the investment and research in neuroscience. You know, countries, Europe, the States, China, they're all putting billions of dollars into brain projects. And a big part of that is that governments know that we're all getting older and that dementia is an increasing problem. And if you can slow down or try and address some of that cognitive decline with a medicine, then clearly that's a huge win for everybody.
Mm. Richard Heyer, Tracy mentioned her 2-year-old daughter with the traumatic brain injury. Speak a little bit about this notion of savant skills, if you will, being awakened in people with brain trauma. There's a lot been written about that and how science uses electrical stimulation to copy that trauma in some way to create sort of similar results. Can you speak to that, Richard?
Yes. I mean, that's a complicated question, but basically, how savants do what they do is a complete mystery. We have no idea whether or not anyone can do those mental feats given the right brain stimulation is an open question. I wanted the subtitle of my book to be The Neuroscience of Intelligence, Unlocking Your Inner Genius If You Have One. But the publisher wouldn't go for that. So it's just not clear that every person has the potential to do what savants do. They seem to have very unusual brains in unknown ways. And we have no idea how to make people into savants. And the case studies about people having brain accidents and brain damage and then suddenly becoming piano players and musical savants, those are very much undocumented claims. So I take those with a grain of salt.
Tracy, thanks for your call. Let's go to Alicia in Spokane, Washington.
Hi, it's Alicia. Hi.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So my question is, what is the purpose of higher intelligence? Is it just for personal gain and happiness? Because if you look at people who are intelligent, intelligence doesn't include higher empathy, higher morals, and higher ethics. It just means you're smarter. So where is that gaining for the whole world if you don't have the rest of it to go with it?
Thanks very much. Richard Heyer?
Well, you're absolutely right. Intelligence is not the only thing that contributes to life success, but it is one of the most important. And without it, having all the other things will only get you so far. But it's not a question of what the purpose of it is. I mean, intelligence exists. Differences among people exist. I would go a step further back to our earlier discussion. I think that if science knew how to increase intelligence, I would say that there's a moral obligation to use that knowledge. I don't see any downside to being smarter. I just don't see it. You'll have smarter criminals. You'll have smarter police. Higher intelligence, I think, is better than lower intelligence.
Let's get Mike in here from Atlanta. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
I guess I have kind of an observation, and I agree actually with what Alicia was saying, that high intelligence, especially what we measure high IQ, is a poor indicator of, I'd say, a success in life, but also the ability to communicate with other people. I'm a member of a high IQ society that I joined about 5 years ago. I'm 65 now because I used to disregard my IQ scores. And it took me a while to realize that my communications with most people most of the time were pretty heavily impacted by my abilities to reason things out quickly, to have a hierarchy of choices to make, of pattern recognition, of a lot of things that I could explain to people or even help kind of coach them along. But then that becomes tedious for me, and it's not particularly enjoyable, I think, for other people to have mm-hmm. to, you know, go through that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's lots of reasons why, in and of itself, especially high IQ, is more of a challenge than a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going to recommend a story that actually got me involved in this IQ society I'm in, which was a story by this guy named Grady Towers. He wrote this thing called The Outsiders that basically describes in fairly accurate detail what kinds of distinctions somebody like him and me experience that fundamentally end up causing dysfunction in our lives.
Mike, I'm out of time, but I do appreciate your call there from Atlanta. David Adam, wrap us up here. The Genius Within, the book you just wrote, most important lesson you learned about unlocking your brain's potential.
I think that that it's really valuable to have a conversation about intelligence because there's a great deal of misunderstanding about intelligence. There's a great deal of unfortunate history around intelligence. But actually, as Richard was saying, it is one of the key ways of trying to judge as a group how successful people can be. And actually, you know, all of the evidence that there is suggests that, just as Richard was saying, at the lower end of the scale, it makes it hard for people to live their lives. If you have a high IQ, you are more likely to do well in life. You are more likely to get a job that pays well. You're likely to have better health. And you could actually be better at communicating. I think we have, there's lots of misconceptions about intelligence. And if we can talk about cognitive enhancement just as a way of introducing some of those topics, then I think it will make us smarter, even if, you know, if it doesn't increase all of our IQs.
Well, hopefully we started that conversation today. David Adam, editor at the journal Nature and author of The Genius Within. David, thanks so much for being with us today. Fascinating topic.
Thank you.
Richard Heyer, professor emeritus at the University of California, Irvine's School of Medicine and author of The Neuroscience of Intelligence. Great to have you, Richard. Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, as always, thanks to you. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.